Welcome to Kidney Talk, a program of Renal Support Network, a show that streams health, happiness, and hope to the kidney community. You can download all Kidney Talk shows from iTunes and find a variety of resources to help you navigate this illness at rsnhope.org. Please welcome your host, Lori Hartwell, who has lived with kidney disease since the age of two.
Well, welcome to Kidney Talk. Today we have Dr. Todd Minga. He is a board-certified internal medicine and nephrology. He received his training at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. Following his training, he moved to Florida, where he spent years in private practice. And he just told me that he moved to Maine. I don't know what he's thinking. But during this time, Dr. Minga maintained a busy nephrology practice, including serving as a medical director of a dialysis unit and maintaining research center focused on chronic kidney disease and dialysis. Currently, he is a vice president of clinical research and medical affairs of Akebia Therapeutics, where he is continuing to focus on bettering the life of each person impacted by kidney disease. Dr. Minga enjoys activities of all four seasons. He better, because they have them, and spending time with his family. So welcome, Dr. Minga, to Kidney Talk.
Thank you, Lori. I appreciate the invite, and it's always a pleasure to speak to the Renal Support Network.
I'm really curious because the topic today is about anemia and the stages of kidney disease, because a lot of people don't know that you can have anemia in any stage of kidney disease. So maybe you could just quickly go over the different stages.
Yeah, thank you. I think it would be great to really understand why we stage. So there are five stages, stage 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Stage 1 is the most consistent with normal kidney function, although there may be another abnormality of the kidney. But as we progress down stages to stage 2, 3, 4, and 5, you can have progressive symptoms, and one of those symptoms being symptoms of anemia, right? I mean, we like to be able to really delineate what stage a patient is in, because again, it really does dictate how we treat and really how we approach the overall care of patients. And to give an example, stage 2 is when you start developing difficulties or less likely to have normal functioning kidneys. As we progress to stages 3 and 4, some of those symptoms and signs of kidney failure become more prominent. And stage 5 is end-stage kidney disease, where we really depend on transplantation and our dialysis therapies for treatment. So it is a continuum, and it is really defined by the level of kidney function you have that's always reported on a chemistry, on a kidney profile, if you will, of what EGFR, estimated glomerular filtration rate, you have. We take that number, and that number helps define what stage you're in. And of course, that stage helps the nephrologist and your care team define the treatments that would be needed.
Well, and you know, it's interesting because when you hear the word end stage kidney disease, that doesn't mean your end stage.
That's
it means the kidneys
correct.
Are end stage. And I think people get confused about that.
No, and I think that's important. I mean, we look at kidney function and how much. I mean, I use it as the lungs, the heart. Every organ has a level of function, the highest function. And as if we lose functions, some of those processes that are responsible for maintaining the body's normal state. And I use kidneys as a great example. Controlling how much fluid we lose, controlling the hormones that are made for anemia. So as we progress down the continuum at stage 5 or end stage kidney disease, that's the point at which the kidneys can no longer maintain the processes needed to be able to control all the different types of processes that occur. Again, difficulty with getting rid of certain things like electrolytes and potassium, difficulty with making adequate hormones so you don't develop anemia, bone disease, all these things that become more critical. And at the point of end-stage kidney disease, you're no longer able to maintain those normal processes at the level that you need to. And that's where dialysis or transplant comes in as a necessity, again, to overcome the amount of deficiencies you have due to the lack or progression of kidney failure.
You know, it's amazing because they're like mad chemists that work behind the scenes to regulate all these things in our body that make it function normal. And we don't really know that it's not working until we feel it. You know, I always felt very cold when I was having anemia, and I just wanted to lay under a hot blanket. And I hear this all the time, but I get calls from people who are like 70 years, 70, 80 years old, and their GFR is 3. And I mean, kidneys naturally progress if you don't have a disease state attacking them. It's natural for aging. So we try to let them know that, you know, make sure you talk to your doctor about how you can do, you know, keep your kidneys healthy. But, you know, it doesn't mean you're going to go to end stage because you're in 3, because it's confusing with cancer.
It is. And that time frame is not always, again, the cause of kidney disease. And some people, we call this natural progression, right? You mentioned that as we get older, we do lose some kidney function, but it's adequate kidney function to maintain the activities that's needed for the body. But once you get to the level where some of those processes are impaired, and you said the master chemist, I think it's a great way to describe kidney function, blood flows through the kidney, and in real time, constantly, it's really assessing what we need and what we don't need. So it keeps the proteins, it keeps the cells, it keeps all the immune-fighting proteins that are available for the body, but also gets rid of toxins, gets rid of excess salt and water. And you can imagine, as we have progression of kidney disease, the ability for the kidneys to keep up with that work becomes impaired. But to your point, if you have stage 3 kidney disease or stage 4 kidney disease, it doesn't mean you're going to progress. And that's the whole point of early detection and early treatment. So if you have high blood pressure that's impairing your kidney function, then the ultimate treatment would be maintaining good blood pressure to help take the pressure off the kidneys, to help take the trauma or the insult off the kidneys, to keep the kidney function where it is, and again, to prevent that progression. So early detection. Typically, patients are referred to nephrologist when they develop stage 3, and that's what we call moderate kidney disease. But it starts before then with your relationship with your primary care provider, where you're looking for signs of diseases that can impact the overall kidney function.
And this is about, if we went in deeper in this topic, we could talk for 2 hours. We could talk for hours. And, you know, I just really want to call out to Disney or one of the, movies that they need to make a hero about a kidney, because the kidneys are really the heroes of your body. I mean, that with the liver, I would say. The heart's just a pumper. It just pumps, right? But it gets all the attention. Hearts get all the attention, but it just really is a pump, right?
Yeah, you call it the reason I went into nephrology, right?
I'm just calling it like it is. but let's move on over into, you know, anemia, a topic that I've dealt with my entire life almost, it seems like. And there's been a lot of evolution of anemia management that I've seen in the last 50 years. But let's talk a little bit about what causes anemia. And, you know, because it's a little confusing, because sometimes you just think you're tired or lazy, or I know I'm like, oh, I'm out of shape. I'm this, I'm that. We always blame it on ourselves. But let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, they're all great points, Lori. And we mentioned about as we develop kidney disease, one of the major functions of the kidney is, again, to assess where we are. So if they find that the amount of oxygen delivery is low, then we increase a hormone called EPO. We increase EPO, that increases the bone marrow to make more red blood cells, to really increase the amount of oxygen delivered to all of your organs. So you can imagine, as we develop kidney disease and progression to kidney failure, the ability to generate that hormone becomes impaired. So even though we may have low oxygen delivery, the kidneys are not able to secrete normal amounts of the hormone EPO, and we become progressively anemic. When we become progressively anemic, that's less oxygen delivery to organs. So every organ in the body needs a minimum amount, but ideally the ideal amount of oxygen delivery. If you don't have that, you develop symptoms. So let's take the lungs. If you have less delivery of oxygen to the lungs, you may be short of breath. If you have less oxygen delivery to your muscles, you may have fatigue. Less oxygen delivery to the brain, you may have fogginess or difficulty concentrating. So as we progress down the stages from stages three, when it becomes more apparent and patients are more likely to become anemic once they enter stage three, the moderate stage of kidney disease, the ability to maintain a hemoglobin or a blood count for good oxygen delivery again becomes impaired. And that's when you start typically having symptoms. And the only way to know if your symptoms are related, as you pointed out, to being out of shape or being in a condition of fatigue from other reasons is to check blood work.
Blood work.
The only way to know if a patient is anemic is to do the blood work, to look at the lab test hemoglobin. But there's also other things that happen when you develop kidney disease. You have less ability to absorb dietary iron, for instance, so you become iron deficient. You have less likely to use the iron you have in your body, again, so you're not able to make the red blood cells and deliver the oxygen. So it becomes a progressive problem. But the most important thing is monitoring hemoglobin, monitoring iron levels to make sure if the levels are to the critical point where treatments might be needed. You might be surprised how much correction of anemia can correct some of these underlying symptoms that develop in the whole multitude of other difficulties that may be going on, lung disease, heart disease, muscle disease, all the other things. Correction of anemia can impact quality of life.
Well, and I remember the days before they had any type of treatment for anemia, and the only treatment was to get blood transfusions. I mean, right. I would get 2 units every 6 weeks. Wow. And I couldn't wait to get those blood transfusions because the rules in Medicare were that you had to have a certain level of hemoglobin to be able to qualify.
Absolutely.
And that meant me as a young lady trying to live her life, good weekend, bad weekend. It was very black and white. So I learned to drink a big gulp before they drew my blood. So I'd make sure that I could get the blood when I wanted it and stay working and do all the things. You have to figure out how to make it work because you feel so bad. And I've had a 6 and 7 hemoglobin.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had a 5 due to a blood loss.
Right.
And you feel like, I mean, you feel like a washed out rag. I don't even know, like you have the worst flu ever. So, you know, sometimes we chalk it up to other things, but it could be something as simple as that. I did want to talk a little bit about how anemia is for normal people, what the numbers are and what the expectations are for patients with kidney disease. And how do you recognize anemia as a physician? So it's a kind of a two-sided question.
Yeah, the first part of that, Lori, I think is critical because the normal hemoglobin is approximately 14 to 15. Okay, so that's the level that you'll see. Now, there are other causes of anemia, so it's not uncommon to have a 13, 14, even 12 hemoglobin and clinically not know it. I mean, some people are more sensitive to anemia, so they may have more fatigue. Others, if it's a slow process, can dip down into the 11 or 12 and still feel fairly good. At least they think they do because it's such a slow process. And that's what happens. You mentioned blood loss, which is quick. The anemia that's associated with kidney disease, for instance, is very gradual. So we have, it's not this, I wake up one morning, I feel bad, the day before I felt great. It really is a progressive, aggressive lowering of hemoglobin to develop these symptoms. When we think about treating anemia, typically, to give you reference, we don't talk about treating with some therapies until you get below hemoglobin of 10. And the real reason for that is not so much correction of symptoms, but it is an important part that you mentioned, but it's preventing the transfusions. So once you get a hemoglobin below 10, as you mentioned, that's when the critical point of do you need a blood transfusion? So we want to keep the hemoglobin above 9.5 or 10 to prevent you needing a blood transfusion. As you know, blood transfusions leads to an immune reaction from the body. We create these antibodies, which can make it more difficult to get a kidney transplant. So transfusions should always be the last resort for correction of anemia. The other thing to point out is when we're treating anemia of chronic kidney disease, we don't target normal. So if you look at your labs, we typically target between a hemoglobin of 10 to 11. I made the comment that normal hemoglobin between 13, 14, 15, depending on gender. So we don't target that normal. We target between 10 to 11. And why do we target that level? It's because that's a level we feel confident. If we keep it there, we can, one, help make patients feel better. But again, on the other side, preventing that blood transfusions. And you made the comment that there was a time when we didn't have therapies and blood transfusions were the only last resort, but they came with a price, right? They came with this good day, bad day. They came with risk of infections back in the day. They came risk of allergic reactions. They came with, and again, today, the biggest, again, would be the difficulty in getting a kidney transplant due to the immune reaction that happens when you get a transfusion. So we try our best to initiate therapies before we get to that critical point.
Well, yeah, back in the old days is, you know, they said after many, many units of blood, they said, we have to test you for AIDS and it's likely you may have it. And luckily, I did not. But it's very scary. And also, you know, there's always a shortage of blood supply. I mean, and I'm always very mindful of that. I also feel guilty sometimes when I get blood. And oftentimes, you know, I become anemic and this is a diagnosis just from having an infection. Infections can cause mm-hmm. you to be anemic, right? And absolutely. So if you've been hospitalized or something like that, you need to be aware of it because it's confusing when you read your lab results because I always have the word abnormal. Even with a transplant, my hemoglobin runs about 11.812. And, you know, that's not even normal. So I have abnormal, but it's much better than, you know, it was much better than when I was on dialysis. Let me tell you, I can tell the difference. And so, you know, it's weird because as a patient, you get desensitized to looking at your lab results because it always says abnormal on almost everything.
Yeah. Why can't we get it normal, right? That's always the question.
I know. Don't you love to be called abnormal? I like to be called unremarkable. That is the best word in healthcare is when I hear they did a test to find out of something and it was unremarkable because that means they didn't find anything. And I'm like, I'd love that word. But going back to anemia and infection, I mean, it could cause serious anemia.
It can. And, you know, when you look at the progression, I mentioned that stage three, that moderate kidney disease, and then really becomes prevalent at stage four. But over 50% of patients with end-stage kidney disease or stage five kidney disease develop an anemia that should be treated. In the dialysis environment, as you know, it is a standard of care to treat anemia to a target hemoglobin, again, to correct it to around 10 to 11. Once again, to help us feel better, again, higher would be better, but we have studies to show patients with end-stage kidney disease, if you target hemoglobins that are normal to someone's level without kidney disease, it actually has risks. So there's a balance between treating the anemia, avoiding some of the symptoms, avoiding the need of transfusion, but also not targeting levels that are too high that can lead to some cardiovascular risks associated with the treatment itself. So it is that fine balancing line of keeping it between 10 and 11 to avoiding the extremes on potential extremes on both sides.
It's like, you know, Goldilocks. I mean, it's like threading a needle and you need to stay on top of it because if you don't, it can have serious consequences. I had a question that's not, I just came to mind, but I often think, wow, they take so much blood from me. They take so much blood from me. And those are little precious little red blood cells with oxygen coming out of them. So I do imagine, you know, if you're in the hospital and you feel like a pincushion, Or, you know, you're getting, you know, transplant labs done. I mean, a lot of blood is taken, so you have to be really on top of it.
You do. You do. And I think that's a good point, Lori. I think even when we get into dialysis, for instance, you do lose some blood through the dialysis setup. So in addition to what we normally would lose, so as we, another point, I guess, is that the red blood cells, the cells in the body that carry oxygen, actually don't survive as long in patients with chronic kidney disease. So we're turning over these red blood cells, but they're also not able to live as long, if you will, as someone without kidney disease, with about 3 months. So it is, you know, not, we're not making them, and we're not, they're not lasting as long. So that's because of the progression so quickly. To your point, as we get into stage 3, 4, and 5, it becomes super important, again, to make sure we're not losing blood in the GI tract. We don't have other vitamins and minerals that are deficient. We don't have other diseases that could potentially lead to anemia. And to your point, be as judicious as we can with how much blood we're taking from patients. So I know there's a push to minimize the amount that's needed for the routine blood work. But I would say, yes, that would have an impact. But unfortunately, a lot of what we do in nephrology with the chemistries and the liver test and the even checking for anemia, right? We need blood. So that becomes a necessary evil. And I think the critical importance of maintaining that management, that monitoring of these levels, so we don't end up, give an example of kidney function, right? I mean, I would rather know, in my patients, to know I have mild to moderate kidney disease, because I know I can monitor it. I can check that every 3 or 6 months to make sure there's no worsening. I can check for all the other potential things that could lead to progression of kidney disease. So yes, precious blood, precious urine, all the things that we give up when we go to the lab are critically important in monitoring and guiding management. So that's a necessary evil, unfortunately.
Well, all I can hope too is there's more non-invasive tools available, sure, to patients to test.
Absolutely.
Labs. I'm really, I think that's the future. But let's move into, you know, what are the treatments for anemia, and how do patients go about advocating for themselves?
Great question. And I mentioned this earlier about, as the kidney disease progresses, there are certain other things that become a problem. And one of those I mentioned is iron absorption and utilizing the iron that we have within the body. So we want to make sure that what we're treating, the anemia that we're treating, is related to the chronic kidney disease and not from something else. And one of the biggest something else's is iron deficiency. So a key is, once we diagnose anemia of chronic kidney disease, we really want to make sure that our levels of iron and even our levels of certain vitamins like B12 and folate are adequate to be able to make red blood cells. So the treatment number one would be assessing your iron to make sure you don't need iron. When you have mild to moderate kidney disease, you can take oral iron and it works fairly well. But as you become progressively down in the stages 4 and 5, you really can't absorb oral iron. So IV iron becomes critical to replace the iron deficiency. No iron, no blood. So that's number one. Next, as I mentioned, that as kidney function declines, we lose that ability to respond and make the protein called erythropoietin, or EPO. And that's the hormone that stimulates the bone marrow to make more blood. So one of the other treatments is to replace that hormone, that EPO, with an injection. And again, that is determined between you and your caregiver at what level. Typically, we begin those therapies, like we call them ESAs, or erythropoietin stimulating agents, the EPOs, when you get a hemoglobin below 10. There is an alternative therapy available for patients on dialysis that is called a HIF-PHI. And what that oral medication does, it simulates a low oxygen environment. So the body thinks the oxygen is low, and it helps the body respond by making its own erythropoietin. So it's a way of generating, instead of giving erythropoietin in an injection, it helps the body make more erythropoietin itself, and that again will help drive the bone marrow to bring up the hemoglobin and treat the anemia. So that's the three pivotal, and of course we don't want to talk about the last resort, and that's transfusion. We want to avoid transfusions for the reasons that we stated.
Yes, I mean, transfusions is a very quick way to raise your blood level, but if you're proactive, it really helps, you know, minimize that. And there's a blood shortage. People need to donate blood. When you talk about the oxygen, you know, like it's almost oxygen deprivation, but you don't feel it. It's just tricking your body into feeling so it will make it. I remember when I traveled to Denver one time, and, you know, it's a mile high city, and you have to acclimate when you get there. I mean, because it's so high, your body needs more oxygen. And I mean, I think there was at one time, I don't recall, but people in Denver can have a little higher hemoglobins.
Absolutely.
Because of that issue. And, you have to be really careful when you're traveling to those places if you're anemic, because you need to be aware that it can impact how you feel.
Absolutely.
Until your body acclimates, right? And that's the same thing if you go up into the mountains if you're anemic. You will feel it.
Absolutely.
We often blame ourselves that something's wrong, and that's what I want to really relay to patients, that, you know, sometimes there's medical reasons things are happening to you, and we're always quick to feel the guilt or something that we did wrong. And a lot of it's just something that's medically wrong with you.
That's right.
So just our final question, because it's been a great interview. What can patients do to help themselves? I don't mean to be mean, but it's really hard to see a doctor sometimes when you need it. It's hard to get blood tests sometimes when you need it. There's different things going on in this country that healthcare may be delayed a little bit more than when you need it. And so what are some warning signs for people to be aware of so that they can, you know, access their doctor? I love my portal. I email my doctor whenever I have a question. And he can do a lot of things through that instead of trying to, you know, go see him. So I just wanted to follow up with that as a last question.
No, thank you. I think that's critically important. You know, we are always talking about prevention, and the way to prevent is to know. It's a way to know is to be an advocate for ourselves. And I think that's a challenge, as you mentioned, sometimes is getting the attention, especially when you develop chronic kidney disease, because you become this symptom, right? I have chronic kidney disease, therefore I should be feeling fatigued. I should be feeling other difficulty concentrating, but that's not necessarily the case, especially in mild to moderate kidney disease. You have to know where you are. We always talk about knowing what your GFR, your estimated glomerular filtration rate is, and that's calculated on every lab. So every time you get a kidney function panel, your eGFR is there, and we must know what that eGFR is. Just like hemoglobin for anemia, we must know as patients what our hemoglobin is, because it puts us in the driver's seat. It helps us understand, what was my GFR last time? What can I do to improve it? And the only way to know trends is to do these assessments. Hemoglobin is very similar when you talk about anemia. It's very easy to get a lab performed to tell us where we are. So if you do become progressive shortness of breath, things don't seem right, you become more fatigued, can't get out of bed, you have to be assessed, because it can't be written off as another symptom of chronic kidney disease. You have to know where you are. It's critically important. The sooner you know where you are, the sooner you can get treatments that'll help keep you where you are to make you better. And I think that being an advocate sometimes comes with a little bit of extra effort, because if you are not informed, you don't know what your lab work is, you don't understand the lab work, you don't understand the impacts of treatment on your lab work and your kidney disease, it puts us in a very difficult position. So I think advocacy for our health, persistence sometimes works. At least to your point, at least checking to see if something's different. It may not be a 3-month follow-up. Things just don't seem right. can we check my blood work to make sure everything is stable? I don't think these are unreasonable requests, because if we don't advocate for ourselves, it's very difficult in a very, very constrained environment to have someone advocate for us. Even though everyone means well, the resources don't always support that.
Well, and you know, a lot of times my family will help advocate for me because they're well-versed in anemia. And I just wanted to, I just recalled something, because sometimes patients think that all healthcare professionals know everything that's going on with them. And I know consistently, if you're hospitalized and you're, it doesn't mean your nephrologist will know about it, you know, all the time. And so because you might go in for the weekend or something like that, or for one or two nights, or you miss a treatment because of it, and you might be missing your dose.
That's right.
You have to really be on top of things nowadays. And I thank you for your knowledge. You are an incredible educator. I have to say that. You explain things really, really well, Dr. Minga.
Thank you. Thank you.
You know, so I think that it's great, because anemia is, and I quote Dr. Belding Scribner, who I was lucky enough to have lunch with and be on his houseboat and talk to him. And, you know, it was just wonderful. And he said, anemia is really killing people. And he wanted to help solve that problem as many other ones, because he recognized, and for those of you who don't know who Dr. Belding Scribner is, he is the grandfather of, one of the grandfathers of dialysis, creating the Scribner shunt. And that was the first permanent access to be able to even have dialysis, which I had when I was 2 years old.
Wow.
So it's pretty amazing that, you know, these problems are solved and then we take them for granted, because I hate to say this, but I think some doctors don't understand what severe anemia looks like because of this, the different options, and it's devastating.
Yeah.
So I thank you for your attention, and we'll get this podcast out, and you know, you can send questions if you like, we'll forward them or try to answer them, and we'll have to have you on as a future guest, because I think we could definitely find another topic that we could help educate our audience with.
Thanks so much, Lori, and again, I appreciate your advocacy for patients and Renal Support Network, and appreciate the input.
Thanks for listening to Kidney Talk, a program of Renal Support Network. Please make sure to find us on Facebook or sign up for our newsletter at rsnhope.org. Kidney Talk is intended for informational purposes only. It is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment from your physician. Always seek the advice of your own healthcare provider regarding your medical condition.